The VGRT Gaming Podcast, Episode 512, recorded on August 14th, 2018.
Welcome to the 512th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 345th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Durr.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
So it seems like we're starting to heat up now because there's a bunch of new games being announced. There's stuff being talked about. Mostly indie games, you know, it's not like we didn't know Red Dead Redemption 2 was coming out soon, but there's a lot of indie games being announced, and it's cool, and we're finally starting to have stuff to talk about. As a matter of fact, there's stuff we're not going to talk about on the podcast because there's just so much new stuff. And here's the thing, I don't give two shits about some Overwatch player being banned for in-game toxicity. I really don't care. Oh my god, someone on a hero-based shooter was saying slurs? Wow, that never happens.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about XQC, it's the same guy over and over and over again, and he just can't shut the fuck up, so...
And I really don't care about what Ninja, if Ninja can't play with women. Dude, I don't care. Just because you have, you know... You feel like you're going to assault a woman just by being next to her. You know, I really don't care.
Something's wrong with that guy.
I really don't care. This is why PewDiePie can't be on Disney.
If you don't care, then why are we talking about it?
Because we're not going to talk about it. I'm just revealing stuff that, you know...
I feel like we're talking about it.
I would like to talk about Phantom Doctrine, but we're not. Those of you who don't know, Phantom Doctrine is an indie game, I think? I think it's an indie game. It's on GOG and Steam. And if you love XCOM, picture XCOM set during the Cold War without any aliens, just spies. Cool. And looking at it, it looks really cool. Have you seen that, TJ?
I have not.
Oh, okay. Check out Phantom Doctrine.
Okay.
I don't care if Black Ops 4 has a Battle Royale beta.
It's isometric. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah. Well, have you ever played XCOM?
No, yeah, I haven't.
That's
not.
What XCOM is, except with aliens.
Okay.
Yeah,
nice. You didn't make that sound like a bad thing, though, Jenna.
What?
XCOM, but without aliens.
Here's the thing. It's based in real... You know, fine, aliens or elves, dwarves, you know, that's fine, fantasy, sci-fi. But sometimes I just want something that's grounded in reality without any mystic stuff and without any sci-fi stuff. Oh, okay, there is sci-fi in it, but it's more like speculative, you know, weaponry like you might see in James Bond.
Yo, speaking of which, this is probably not a big news piece either, but did you know that Jagged Alliance is coming back?
Yes, and I think that's one of the items. No, it isn't. Yeah. Oh, yes, it is one of the items.
I didn't see it.
You spoiler.
I'm a jerk.
Spoiler. You have to read that news item then.
Bad teaching.
I really don't care that Monster Hunter World is not available in China for whatever bullshit reasons they want.
There's a lot of games not available in China.
You know, here's the thing, game developers and movie producers. You know, you lie down with dogs, you're going to wake up with fleas.
Are we calling Chinese people dogs?
No, we're talking about the government as dogs.
Oh, okay.
You know, make strange bedfellows. Well, guess what? The Chinese government is gamifying oppression. They have that service in which if you have a low score according to their needs, you get bumped down on priority lists. I'm not going to talk about it. It's something that was discussed a while ago, and it's chilling. It is very chilling.
Yeah, it's Big Brother.
And I really don't give two farts that Fallout 76 isn't going to be launching on Steam. The reason for that is Bethesda says they want to, quote-unquote, directly serve its players. You know what they really are saying? We don't want to give Valve what's it called, part of our money for DLC and loot cards and all that stuff. We'll release it when either Valve stops demanding money on DLC or we have a version that's has no DLC. It's the game plus all DLC. That's why Mass Effect didn't appear on Steam until they had the full game packs, you know, with all the DLC included, so that Valve couldn't, you know, make money on their DLC sales.
Yeah, I mean, at a certain point, people like Epic and Bethesda, who are have massive amount of money, are starting to realize that they don't need to go through middlemen to sell their games.
This is true.
Steam charges people for DLC. That's why you don't see stuff on. That's why you don't see EA stuff on Steam until they have the full versions with all the DLC. They never released Dragon Age Origins on Steam, for instance. They did release Dragon Age Origins Ultimate because it had all the DLC. You know? I'm wondering if you care, though, TJ, that Fortnite's getting a very powerful sniper rifle.
Not particularly. I mean, I care about it as far as, like, I want to see what people do with it, because that stuff like that changes up the meta a certain bit. Like when the guided rocket came out and people were surfing on it and doing crazy shit with that, it'll make for funny times, I suppose, or less funny times, considering you just shoot people in the head with it and then they're dead.
Yeah. A shooter game got a gun. Wow. Interesting.
it's interesting when it's
a gameplay balance thing.
Yeah. Mm. It's interesting when a certain weapon comes out that's notably stronger than the rest or has a certain skill cap to it that people can take advantage of.
Were there no sniper rifles before this?
There were, but they weren't quite as strong as this one that seemingly is.
Yeah. We won't be discussing Gris, even though it looks pretty. It's a watercolor 2D, and people are saying it's sort of like a 2D journey. I don't see that. I see it as more... I see it more as something like Limbo or other games that are 2D, artistic platformers, you know, in this case.
Yeah, but Limbo had this creepiness about it. This looks like you're exploring a world, Limbo, you're trying to survive and figure out what the heck is going on, and it's very creepy and very dark.
It reminds me of Fez.
Hmm. What is that?
Well, I could see what Jonah was saying with Limbo as far as, like, okay, straight up functionality, mechanics, and gameplay goes. It just kind of looked like you jump around. It doesn't look like there's too much more to it than that. Aesthetically, obviously, very different. But yeah. I don't know. I didn't notice anything out of the ordinary when it came to, like, actions.
Well, mechanical-wise, then it's like every platformer I've ever seen. But, you know, but I care about story and aesthetics.
When I saw Blocky Little Plant Friend in that trailer, I was so delighted.
So before we go on to talking about stuff that we've played, TJ, you're back from BlizzCon. QuakeCon. I want to go to both at some point. I want to go to BlizzCon at some point. I want to go to QuakeCon at some point.
QuakeCon is basically BethesdaCon. bring plenty of money. Gaylord Texan is expensive.
Well, don't they? Here's the thing about BlizzCon. I know for a fact that they give out these sweet swag bags to everybody who attends because they are spending a lot of money. So they give them these swag bags. Like they might give the new expansion to the latest World of Warcraft, or they may give a pack with with some former games and stuff like that. You know, QuakeCon. You know, has been around forever. But now you might as well call it BethesdaCon now because they talk about Bethesda games. And I know that Fallout 76 was something that they talked about a lot at QuakeCon. A lot of stuff was revealed, like card-based perks for the special system.
Oh, yeah. I was at that panel, and it was very cool. Actually, I was at a lot of stuff this weekend. If there was something that was there, I was probably at it, and I saw a lot of neat things while I was out there.
Well, let's talk about Fallout 76, because there was a lot of news about it. And we don't have a news item about it here, because here's the thing, you know, if QuakeCon is like being sucked into a black hole, you know, you're going to start talking about everything that was at QuakeCon and it'll never get out of it. So we might as well just give the highlights for it. We'll start with the card-based perks. Some people are thinking it's like sort of like a loot box system.
It's not. Basically, when you have a certain amount of special points that you allocate, and then when you level up twice, every two level ups, so at 2, 4, 6, 8, etc., you get a card pack of four cards, and these cards are your perks. They're the perks that you've come to know and love from the Fallout games like Slugger and Nerd Rage and things like that. But now in Fallout 76, they're assigned a value of one of the special attributes, and that value is how much of your special points they take to equip. So if you have a card like Nerd Rage that takes up like maybe 5 strength points, that means you take that you have to have 5 points in your S special to equip Nerd Rage. But you can stack cards. Like, you don't have to just pick one card in any given attribute. You can, like, say you have like a Slugger or like another strength based card that takes up 2 points and 3 points, and you have 5 strength points. You can equip them both. And as the game goes on, you continue to build special points, continue to get card packs, and continue to be able to mix and match perks as you go.
Yeah, my favorite is how they're dealing with charisma cards. For instance, there's one card called Strange in Numbers. And here's the thing, with charisma, it's basically multiplayer stuff. Because, you know, it's how you deal with other players, but how you buff them. Like, Strange in Numbers is if you have all the positive mutation effects are 25% stronger if your teammates are mutated too.
Yeah, and we shouldn't bury the lead here. There's mutations in Fallout 76. So, like, if you spend too much time around toxic waste and radiation, you can develop a mutation. And one of the ones they told us about during the panel was like bird boned. And this was like, it was a mutation that your strength would basically drop drastically and your bones would break easier, but you would be able to jump twice as high.
Well, you also have happy go lucky as a perk for charisma, in which your luck is increased by 2 as long as you're drunk.
But yeah, so you'll get, if you spend time around radiation, your body will mutate and you'll get these special attributes based off these mutations.
Yeah. The other thing is that they talked about the way they're going to be dealing with griefers. We're not going to get too far into it. It's just that, you know, if you kill too many people, you'll become a wanted murderer.
It's very specific. It has to be if you kill a person who doesn't fight back. It's like if you engage a person and they don't fight back and you kill them anyways, then you become a wanted murderer, and it puts a beacon on you for every other player in the game. It eliminates your ability to see other players, so you can't look at the map and see them coming.
Which would be fun if someone decides to grief you by just running in front of you when you're firing at something else.
They actually mentioned that they were playtesting against something like that. But I don't know what they'll come up with. But yeah.
It'll also be fun if you accidentally do friendly fire. Although, you know, I guess you could turn friendly fire off. But then again, that just makes it easier for griefers. Once they're in your party, they can do all sorts of wonderful things. I'll say this and I'll say it again. You know, griefers find a way around they find what's called chinks in your armor. They know how to game the system. So we'll see. Now, you said mentioned before when we were talking about this on Skype, that one of the guys who was working on this is actually someone from Ultima Online. And if you ever played Ultima Online, which I did during the beta and the first like year of the game, it was a Wild West town. It was just brutal. And here's the thing. There's still shards which still have that system. So you have the people in those shards who actually like it that way.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're bringing, I think it was the lead programmer from the game, he was coming over to Blizzard in order to work on Fallout 76. So I have to imagine that on some level he knows what his last game was like and will have some idea of the problems that he'll face here. And I would assume that because they're doing internal testing and then they're going to be doing a beta in which they're asking people to basically break the system, be as ridiculous as possible, and help them find all the problems. Huh. Which, you're right, people are creative and will find ways, but I think it's nice to see that they're putting so much effort into building these systems and then also making sure that they work.
I also think that these will be limited multiplayer, so you can manage who's on there, who gets on, who can be banned, who can be doing whatever.
Oh, yeah. That was another thing, Scott, is that they are doing private servers.
Thank you. Yes, What's the point? I figured they were doing.
Mods. You'll be able to do modding in private servers.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'll probably have a podcast or turncast of Fallout server, and it'll be just me and my friends, and I won't have to worry about griefers coming on and giving us trouble, because we'll just have our own secluded group.
Yeah, and Fallout and Skyrim have some of the most active modding communities of all time in any game, besides Minecraft, of course. And
yeah,
it's a good thing to have those private servers, because it caters specifically to that crowd that may want to make things like Randy, Macho Man Randy Deathclaw.
That was cool. Yeah.
So I take it you're not going to be getting the $900 Resident Evil Premium Edition, TJ.
If only I had money just burning a hole in my pocket and to throw at anything I felt like at a whim. Because I absolutely would. It's cool as hell.
It comes with a keyboard, a QWERTY keyboard that replicates what a typewriter, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Complete with the carriage return on the side.
That's so cool, and I want it. And I know that after they make it and put it out, people are going to take that and they're going to sell it for like $2,000 instead of $900.
Oh. I also have a 12-inch tall statue of Leon and the soundtrack and an art book. But yeah, the keyboard looks really nice. And by the way, it is a functioning typewriter, just so you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really interesting. But I know that you're just geek for Resident Evil 2 remastered anyway, just flat out.
Oh yeah, it's looking good. I like that they didn't go with Resident Evil 7's first person perspective for this, because as fun as that was for that game, I like seeing the characters that they established in Resident Evil 2.
Yeah. By the way, just for those of you who don't know, the typewriter in Resident Evil is how you save your game, so it's basically a riff on that.
Mm-hmm.
It also has an Umbrella Corporation logo on it.
One of the collector's editions also comes with the iconic Resident Evil item box. which I thought about having, because I like having interesting containers, and it's just straight up the item box that was in Resident Evil 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah. And for everybody I know that's actually had hands-on time with Resident Evil 2, say it's far scarier than the original Resident Evil 2 was. Partly because of the bump in graphics, but also they're actually changing some of the gameplay. And one of the major things is that doors can't save you now, because those used to be the load screens, you know, going mm-hmm. through a door. Now, yeah, zombies don't care; they're coming through the door.
Yeah, they're doing everything bigger and better than Resident Evil 2. They're making zombies more frightening. They're making the environment different, which, like, I was kind of surprised that they went out of their way to, like, make the environment different, because they kept Resident Evil 1 remake almost the exact same as far as the environment went.
Yeah.
But with Resident Evil 2, they decided we're upgrading this so much, we might as well make a little bit of a different map and explore possibilities that we couldn't before, which I respect. That's great.
Well, I'll tell you why, actually. Because I have a feeling that Resident Evil 8 is going to take a long time, and they need to fill that void with something between that time. I'm willing to bet you Resident Evil 8 is going to come out in 2020, and Resident Evil 2 is coming out, by the way, on January 25th, 2019, so...
I'm really interested to see how they handle the gun shop scene in Resident Evil 2 at the very beginning of the game, because that was like that kind of set the scene as far as just horrible things happening to anyone and everyone. And I'm interested to see how they approach that, if everything's going to be so different.
Yeah. Anyways, so we will get into what have you been playing. I'll start first. I've been playing Far Cry Primal. And I'm actually enjoying it. It's one of those games in which you play for like an hour and you get really sick of it, but then half an hour later you want to go back into it, and sort of like that. And the thing is that I know the criticisms of Far Cry Primal, but the thing is that I haven't played a proper Far Cry game since Far Cry 2. So it's not like I have, you know, Far Cry 4 and Far Cry 3 sort of making me, you know, sort of like my vision is not clouded by having played those games, and I know Far Cry 3 is supposed to be really, really, really good. Or actually, Far Cry 4 is the one that's really, really, really good.
Yeah. Far Cry Primal is just a very different game as far as, like, I mean, it's obviously because it's a Stone Age, but, like, what a concept for a spinoff, just to go from, like...
From what I understand, in Far Cry 4, he has that fantasy of being a Stone Age person. It's sort of like Assassin's Creed 3 when you had a little bit of boat action, and in Assassin's Creed 4 it was all about the boats. So I think it's sort of like they tested out the concepts. Hey, it's going to work, you know?
Are you having fun becoming the Beastmaster?
Yeah, actually, that's the thing I've been doing most. I've gotten every single creature. The only thing I haven't done yet, and I have the ability to do it, but I haven't done it yet, is a cave bear and a badger.
That's a neat thing, too. And I wonder if they did put in any Easter eggs from the ridiculous Beastmaster movie and show.
I don't know. I don't see any pregnant women who have their fetuses transferred to a cow.
Goodness gracious.
That's what happens in the Beastmaster.
I know.
You ever watch the movie?
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched it. That was a good movie.
It was Robert Singer just before he did V.
When do you get ferret friends?
Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to dropping insanity bombs with my owl.
Nice.
Yeah, you just drop it on the strongest guy there. And watch him whack his friends until they're all dead and he's the only one left there. Then I just stick my saber-toothed tiger on him.
It's amazing to think that Far Cry Primal didn't get more attention than it did for, like, how different it was from the rest of the series. And I think that's part of it, is that just people wanted more Far Cry. But, well, you know.
It's sort of like Blood Dragon, isn't it? Far Cry 4 Blood Dragon?
That was Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon.
Right. I mean, it's sort of like that, you know, and we should take it a complete 180. It still doesn't feel like a full game to me, but then again, you know, I'm playing it, 3 years after it was released, so it's not that big a deal. So yeah, I'm enjoying that. I've also realized that I probably spent $300 to $400 on Cooking Dash over the past 2 years or something like that, and I don't really care. It's insidious. I'm a whale, but I don't care. As long as I'm enjoying it, even though I'm paying the price for it so far of that of a console. Less so on animation break beatdown, but I'm not spending that much money on it. Although I really wish they would drop the Zoidberg, because I'm so close to having Zoidberg Mythic. I have Peggy Hill Mythic, but I want Zoidberg Mythic because my build is mostly Futurama.
Yeah.
So. Anyways, what have you been playing, Scott?
I've been playing the Blackwell Chronicles.
Ah.
It's a point-and-click game, and you're playing as Rosangela Blackwell, who can see ghosts or, you know, dead people. And
people know, there's a lot of Blackwell games. There's five of them now.
Yes, there's five. It's a five-part.
So you're playing
Epiphany? Yes. I've played through most of it already, and you have a ghostly companion that I guess attaches or becomes attached to you, Joey Malone, and you are solving mysteries of what is happening to people who, you know, get killed or, you know, strange.
Can you say what the entire series is about? It's about this woman named Rosalanda Blackwell.
Yeah,
who's a psychic, I believe. She's a medium.
She's a medium, so she can hear the dead and see them and communicate with them, and Joey helps facilitate that because he also died and became attached to her, and it's a family thing too.
Yeah, it's sort of a it's sort of like a riff on film noir, except the detective is the ghost.
And so they work together to do that, and she it's a real struggle with her because she doesn't want to have to deal with this, but she has to. She has very little choice, it seems like. And it has some good funny moments and some really good scary moments, and I love the music.
Now, this is an old game, by the way. This came out 4 years ago. But yes. I'm going to say something. The reason why I know about it is because, for one thing, you know, I get PR about it, but also it's from Watch It Eye Games, and they're based out of New York.
Mm-hmm. yeah, I think the game is set there too. You know, they have like famous landmarks and whatnot.
Nice Guy has, you know, has a certain look to their games. It doesn't quite look like a Sierra game. It looks like a cross between a Sierra game and maybe a LucasArts game. It has all their games have a unique look, and it's not.
Yeah,
it's not quite like Sierra. It's something a little bit different than Sierra.
It's almost like they change artists from game to game. You know, the title card is different. They just look a little bit different. You know, just enough to be similar, but just like you just feel like there's a different artist talking or displaying their art to you.
Yeah. And the thing is that Dave Gilbert writes all the games, by the way. The thing is that it sort of gets lumped in with The Longest Journey because this is one of those few games in which the protagonist is a woman, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like you can choose between... No, she's a woman. And, you know, it's interesting when you have that sort of adventure game.
Yeah, definitely. And... the focus is around her and her struggle to deal with this and to... I mean, I don't want to give the plot away too much, but, you know, like I said, it is a family... it's a family ability to speak with the dead, so, like, her aunt could and her grandmother could.
The problem is that she's a loner and she has almost no friends and she just stays to herself and it's sort of like... She has to be convinced to go do things.
Yeah, and when she does, it's like she kind of pays for it, you know? It's like she thought it was kind of bad before, but then when she does these things, it pisses some people off and they don't know how to deal with it, so they just act like, well, she's bad or whatever, she did something. And, you know, it's really kind of sad to see, you know, a hero have to go through that, but... It's she definitely does her own hero's journey, I think.
Yeah, and her companion, the ghost companion, is Joey Malone.
Mm-hmm. I said that.
Yeah, he's a 1920s guy. I don't know if he's actually a detective. I think he becomes a detective as a ghost, but he wasn't a detective when he was alive.
He wasn't a detective in life. I think he was just...
Oh, he was a tailor. Right.
Yeah, he was... They say in the game eventually, but... I think he was just a store owner or something.
He was a tailor, and he got shot because he was trying to protect his friends from loan sharks.
Yeah. And even that gets explored, too. So it's... I liked it. I think... See, this is one of those games where it, like, explores the characters as much as giving you puzzles and a world to explore.
Yeah,
so I thought...
The second game was kind of odd because that one didn't have Rosa as the lead. I think it was her aunt?
Yeah, her aunt Lauren. So you get to explore her, before her state, or when she went to the... Yeah, I think you find out right away in the first game that she goes into an insane asylum, so you get to experience her play before that. And, it kind of makes it tragic, you know, because you know what's going to happen to her.
Yeah, here's the thing. These games are worth they're pretty inexpensive right now because they've been out for a long while. I'm hoping there's somewhere they have a pack. You know, once you get all five games in one thing, it'd be... I don't know if they do, but yeah, the Blackwell series is a pretty interesting series, and you know, it's something different when you play an adventure game. I mean, it's a point and click, you know, just a regular, but it has. It's, like I said before, it's sort of an off-kilter Sierra game. Sort of like, this sort of reminds me of Sierra, but it's not really Sierra.
Right.
Anyways, go ahead.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was just saying that it definitely feels like it's an homage to Sierra-type games.
Yeah. So what have you been playing, TJ?
Well, I guess I'll talk about the most interesting thing. This last weekend was I played Rage 2.
Oh, okay. Yes, I played it too. So now we can finally... It's sort of like Rage. Here's the thing about the first Rage. It was brown. But now it's sort of like Rage 2 decided to take its color stylings from Suicide Squad.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculously verdant.
Very neon.
Very neon. And... very, very eclectic in it.
I still haven't gotten used to using that thing that you throw. I forgot what it's called. You know, sort of like a glaive.
I'm just going to call it a boomerang blade because it's so... But it's so fun. Oh, my God.
But hit someone to play that game, you're going to have to be an orangutan because it requires so much different button press. To do this, you need to do this, this, and this. And then if you want to do this special attack, you have to do this. You know, it's almost like a fighting game in terms of controls when it comes to doing special attacks.
Did they have the rage moves in the E3 build where you...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. It's like playing a fighting game.
Yeah, because there was a forward charge, then there was one where you would leap up in the air and then smash the ground.
Yep. And you have to do it right, or else you're just going to find yourself You have to do combos, and I don't mean combos as in different moves together. No, I mean to do a button combo just to get stuff done.
Right. And then there's like a meter where if you fill it and then you hit both the shoulder buttons, you go into rage mode, and everything you do just explodes enemies. It's so Bulletstorm that it's not even apologetic about it. I love it.
The game.
it's like if Bulletstorm was a densely packed Mad Max game.
And yeah. Oh, by the way, you know, keep in mind these same guys also did Mad Max.
Uh huh.
Which is, you know, they did Rage Brown. They did Mad Max Brown. You know that they're already. Listen, I'm tired of Brown. Let's get some hot pink in there.
Right, yeah. Let's throw some smoke grenades in there with just the most neon colors we can get. Let's have space stations with all sorts of lasers and all sorts of ridiculous things. Let's make blood so vibrant that it glows. And
I mean, here's the thing. Rage was not a bad game. It was just an uninteresting game. It was sort of like Mad Max in that regard. So they had to find a way to make it interesting, you know? The driving in Rage was really good, so I'm pretty sure the driving in Rage 2 is going to be good, too.
Rage 1 was kind of... It had flash, but it had no substance. And it was over before you knew what was going on, before you knew you were at the end. And so, like, I'm interested to see what the exploration... The big thing for me is going to be the exploration in Rage 2. They need to... I'm happy with what... Like, what I did in my demo at QuakeCon was you basically attack a facility where you try to bring a satellite down from orbit, and it's a nice, like, ridiculously little packed complex where you just go through corridors and rooms just destroying people every step of the way.
You saw the Rage 2 swag I sent you from E3?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Did you bring it with you just to say, hey, look what I got? Unless they were giving it away at the thing.
Did they
have the photo booth thing in which you could make a Rage 2 version of yourself?
Yeah, where you make a Rage 2 cover. I did not.
I did it. I have to scan it at some point.
But at the end of the day, I like that what they did with the combat. I like the Bulletstorm thing. I really do. Another Bulletstorm game in an open world sounds neat. I really want to see what the open world exploration looks like because I think
Bulletstorm game. You mean Bulletstorm as in the game?
And I want to see what the open world looks like because that's going to be the make or breaker for me. If they can densely pack the desert, then I think they're going to be fine.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you something. I mean, I'm just think that multiplayer is going to be the biggest part of this game. I mean, with all the talent, with all the combos that you can do, I can just see people really just specializing in Rage 2.
Yeah. Speedruns, you mean? Because like, there's no co-op or multiplayer just yet that I know of.
It's going to be multiplayer. This game just practically demands it.
It'll be interesting. I hope they do multiplayer for it, because then I can finally start writing on it. As it is now, it looks like it's going to be a pretty good first-person open-world shooter.
Okay, so anyways, we're going to move on to game news. Go ahead, TJ.
All right. Are you sure you don't want me to take the second one?
You can comment on it.
Okay. Patrick Stewart will narrate My Memory of Us from PC Gamer. My Memory of Us caught attention early last year with a trailer revealing a visual style reminiscent of old-fashioned Disney animated shorts. It slyly subverts the game's settings, a Jewish ghetto in Poland during the Second World War, but it's also perfectly appropriate because the game world is seen through the eyes of children. German soldiers are seen as mindless robots, for instance, and the vicious anti-Semitism of adults remains an unlearned mystery among kids. A new trailer today expands upon its promise of a unique emotional game by showcasing the talents of the narrator, announced today as Patrick Stewart. The story of My Memory of Us is a personal one to us, as our grandparents faced similar oppression in World War II. The game is our ode to them and the millions of others that lived and died during this time, Jugular Games CEO Mikuláš Pawlowski?
Yes.
Mikuláš Pawlowski said.
It's a very Polish name.
I'm right there with him. My mom's maiden name is Misek, full-blooded Polish. So when it came time to cast a narrator, Patrick Stewart was the perfect choice. His amazing acting career spans nearly 6 decades, and since the very beginning, he has produced incredible and emotional work. His talent and skills provides the right mixture of gravitas and hope, and his performance resonates perfectly with our game. While obviously fictionalized, My Memory of Us is based on real events that occurred during the war. The city where the game begins is inspired by pre-WW2 Warsaw, and events shown in the game will be based upon actual stories from the war. Mechanically, the game will be built around logic puzzles in 2.5D, but the story promises deeper meaning set in historical reality. My Memory of Us is scheduled to come out on October 9th for Steam, Xbox One, and PS4.
So you watch the trailer, and you seem to like it.
Yeah. Immediately, it's a somewhat black and white with like lightly browned. It has like a storybook page look, like a weathered page look to it. Except for like when things go sour, and then certain people are painted in red clothes, and. It was very reminiscent to me of the story, The Boy with the Striped Pajamas, which was another World War II story of children who just had no idea what was going on, and it was a boy who was in the concentration camps and a boy who went to the fence to talk with him every day. And it ended horribly, and so I'm kind of scared of how this one's going to go, because... You know,
it's interesting because they don't talk. They basically speak in icons, sort of like, you know, exclamation point, question mark, you know, that sort of stuff. Scott, what did you think?
I thought it looked really beautiful, and kind of, now that I think about it, kind of reminds me of the movie Schindler's List, where that girl had an orange jacket on, and it's just, you know, highlighting them. But it just, I liked hearing Patrick Stewart. And
by the way, we should mention that Patrick Stewart's reprising his role as Captain Picard now.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that as well. I want to see what they're going to do with that. But we've got to focus on the video game news. I don't know where this is going to go. I was kind of hoping for a two-player experience, but I guess they want a certain narrative here. So I feel like it's going to be a tale of two brothers. And I'm going to end up really sad at the end.
Yeah. I just don't... Like, maybe... Isn't that always how it goes?
Well, it's not going to be that cancer, or that dragon cancer. At least, it's not going to be that depressing. You know, I don't... Here's the thing. This game could go either way. It could either have a happy ending, which they get out, or they get captured. Because from what I see of the game, it sort of takes place just before they started rounding people up. You know, it's where the Nazis come in, and they get more and more aggressive, and more racist, and more, you know, things get more and more oppressive. So the end of the game is probably going to be around when they start rounding people up. I'm hoping that it's sort of like The Escapist, in which you're just trying to get out. You know? I'd like one of these games to have a happy ending, damn it. Although, really, there is no happy ending, even if you do get out.
Mm-hmm. Man, recently I finished a playthrough of A Way Out, and I don't know.
Oh my god.
And I don't know if you guys have played through that, but that one takes a turn.
Yeah, that was the game, TJ, I was telling you about that I feel is, I don't know, premature to talk about Game of the Year, but for me, that was it.
Getting the feeling this is sort of like a This War of Mine discussion?
I don't know, maybe. But, you know, because...
This War of Mine, one of the feel-good games of 2017.
Feel good. A Way Out is where you're playing two players, co-op, and I thought it was very unique in the way you have to work together in sync to solve problems, to get through situations, and you form a bond, story-wise.
That one's going to sacrifice the other to let the other live at the end. It just screams that without knowing anything about it.
You should play it with your best friend, Jono.
What best friend?
Oh, wow, okay.
Yourself.
Yeah, I guess so.
I'm my own best friend. Paul's still in Florida.
Okay. But you should play it all the way to the end.
Yeah, you know, I can. That's what Let's Play videos are for, or at least, you know. I do Let's Play videos without the commentary. I don't need the commentary.
Mm-hmm. That's a good idea, too. Go through it.
Yeah. You know, this makes me in the mood to play some Grim Fandango, the original version, not the remastered version.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to play that sometime.
Yeah, if you do, try and find a way to play the original version, not the remastered version, because the remastered version makes some subtle changes that irritate the fuck out of me.
I guess
some design decisions that make me say, why would you do that?
And I mean, like... On the matter of this game, like, do what you gotta do. Tell the story that needs to be told, and I guess I expect that no story like this just ends up as a whimsical fairy tale in which everybody turns out okay.
Talking about stuff that really happened to them, you know, real life stuff, you know, from that depression game, from that writer who was the depression game, to that dragon cancer. Every time you have these intensely personal stories, yeah, it's not gonna be fun romp because now you're dealing with reality.
Uh huh.
Yeah. No matter how fantastic they make it, you know, no matter how alternate realism, it's still gonna be a. What was the name of that game that was initially on the PS4 about this guy whose father was an alcoholic and beat him? So he made a game in which he had this creature that would alternatively be friendly, but also, you know, treat him like shit, you know, and attack him.
Me and something. God damn it.
Popo? I think it's Popo?
Popo and me.
Popo and me, or something like that.
Yeah. And he tried to do things Popo to keep him from being angry. Yeah.
It's sort of like every time you have these intensely personal games, even something that's trying to look at something like a mental illness like Hellblade did, you know, it's not going to be a fun romp.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's fine. I've played through games like that, and I played through that Dragon Cancer, and I played through Valiant Hearts.
Award for that.
and I played through Valiant Hearts, which was a World War One game.
Valiant Hearts was sort of like, wow, it was sort of surprising because they had it on Xbox Live Gold Pass, you know, you get it for free. And it was sort of like saying, oh, Jesus Christ, this is going to take things really seriously. Even though it's the graphics are sort of cel-shaded black and white.
Yeah, they're very cartoonish. But, so...
World War One was not a fun time, kids.
So I'll probably take a look, but I expect things to be I expect to be punched in the feels, and I think I don't know, maybe that's a problem to a certain degree, is that I just expect that to happen. I don't know.
It's better than being numb to it, I think, or desensitized.
Yeah, that's true.
And I don't think any war was ever a fun romp.
Yeah, but World War One. If you thought World War II was bad, World War One was worse.
Because that was when technologies were being developed and like, oh, look what we can do to other people now. And
no, it isn't even that. It's here's the thing. If you go through World War One, and especially what preceded World War One. It reminds me of what was the name of the Bismarck? He told Kaiser Wilhelm II, you know, in 20 years there's going to be a massive war, probably started in somewhere in the Balkans, you know, and he was right almost to the date about that. You know, it was completely avoidable. And that's the worst part. And the thing about World War One is that so many... Here's the thing. We would not have had World War II if it wasn't for France wanting revenge. And the other thing about World War One is the Spanish flu, which decimated, you know, a quarter of England. Just picture one out of four people just dying. You know, and Spanish flu made bubonic plague look slow. I mean, people died within 12 hours. Anyways, but the thing is that Woodrow Wilson was afflicted with Spanish flu, and he survived, but he was so weak that he just let the French leader just do whatever. He was set to oppose it, and that led to Nazism, which led to World War II. So many things just had to go wrong. Like, Archduke Ferdinand should have left the city after his car was bombed, but no, he said, I'm going to tour the hospitals, show him, you know, because he was the person who was most friendly towards the Serbs. Was it, or the Croats? Damn, I know, I forget, but he was, and when he was gone, they lost their biggest proponent, and the Hawks just came in and said, let's fight them. Then you had the Germans and the Russians picking sides. It's just a big morass. I mean, there's a reason why In Flanders Field is such a sad song. Anyways, let's talk about happier stuff. Jagged Alliance Rage announced, and this comes to us from PC Gamer. The last Jagged Alliance game, Kickstarter-funded Flashback from 2013, was not very good, but THQ Nordic isn't giving up. The publisher announced today that Cliffhanger Productions is working on a new game in the series, Jagged Alliance Rage, set 20 years after the original. Jagged Alliance Rage will take place on a remote tropical island, but instead of having access to a full-blown mercenary company, it's just you and a few buddies squaring off against the drug lord's personal army. The upside is you're all seasoned badasses. On the downside, you're old, broken down, and suffering from the psychological toll of your chosen lifestyle. Legendary merc Ivan Dolvich struggles with alcoholism arising from the death of his nephew, for instance, while ex-ranger Kyle Simmons is a master of stealth and leukemia survivor whose health has never fully recovered. The game itself will feature turn-based tactical combat, quote-unquote mixed with adventure elements. Along with the debilitating effects of age and mileage, the characters also have access to unique quote-unquote rage skills, which will grow more powerful over time. Single-player and two-player online co-op action will be supported. Jagged Alliance Rage will be the first game published by Handy Games, THQ's Nordic's mobile and indie-focused label. A release date hasn't been set, but it's listed on Steam as, quote-unquote, coming soon. Now, while the writer at PC Gamer didn't quite understand what mixed with adventure elements is, those of us who played Jagged Alliance know exactly what that means, because I actually beta-tested Jagged Alliance 2. If you play Jagged Alliance 2, you'll see my name in the credits. Here's the thing. These mercs don't necessarily will do what you want them to do. Sometimes they'll outright refuse. And if you put two guys who don't like each other on the same team, shit's going to go downhill quickly.
Yeah. Like, there's all sorts of little bits to every soldier that you come across in Jagged Alliance. You've got some that have phobias, some that have certain dislikes and likes. And, there's some that are straight up afraid of going underground, and so if you try to take them into mines, they'll just fall apart, and their aim will be garbage, and they might even kill other soldiers.
Right. Now, you in the other Dragon Alliance games, you were recruiting from a mercenary company, right? You'd see someone, I'll hire him. Here it sounds like you're going to have a limited amount of people, which actually I think might be very interesting, because when you only have six or seven or eight mercs to choose from, it'll allow them to really flesh them out even more than the... And here's the thing. Jagged Alliance 2 fleshed them out really well. If you only have a few mercs to choose from who have histories, you're going to be able to flesh them out even more.
Mm-hmm. And I hope that... I hope that it's a blend of, like, you get a certain set of mercs that are just your starting crew.
All the mercs are going to be your starter, and you don't get any other mercs.
Well, that was a cool thing about Jagged... But that was a cool thing about Jagged Alliance too, was that you also, well, no, you also recruited people as you made your way through the game and gained people's loyalty and trust.
Right, but in this case, it sounds like you can have a limited. It's going to be sort of like Mass Effect 2. You know, you're going to have your team, and you have to figure out which people on your team are going to go on a certain mission. And what I like is that they're hinting that these characters, now forget about the rage skill. It sounds like they're going to be evolving as the game goes on, because one of the things about Jagged Alliance was that they had these personalities, but they never changed. Here mm-hmm. It sounds like they can actually evolve their personality. They can, you know, they're all burned out, so maybe you can help them not be, you know, lift them from being burned out, or you can make them even worse, depending on your actions.
Yeah, age and mileage is a packed phrase here.
Now, I wonder if they're going to have permadeath like you had in... Here's the thing, in Jagged Alliance 2, and all the other Jagged Alliance games for that matter, if one of your mercs died, that was it. You lost them forever.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of possibilities here with this, with what they've established, and I hope they do it well. I really do, because I liked playing Jagged Alliance. It's a quirky, weird little mix of RTS and turn-based combat and strategy, and building up like you're like, it's almost like a weird Fallout game where you have control of a bunch of people at once, instead of just controlling your one character. And I'm talking about early Fallout, like Fallout 1 and 2. And, oh my god,
I
wonder...
They're going back to being on an island again. At least there's that. And they're dealing with another drug lord. Because Dragon Alliance 2, which I beta tested, was all about dealing with a really creepy...
queen.
Leader, a dictator, who was making experiments. And one of the fun things is that you could turn off the science fiction elements off in Jagged Alliance 2. If you didn't want to deal with the experiments, you could make it, oh, we're just going to face against humans. We're not going to bother with the science fiction.
Why would you do that, though?
And make it, well, just to make it more realistic.
Okay,
you know,
sure, but...
Just to take away the fantastic elements.
So for those who don't know, in Jagged Alliance 2, there's a certain point at which you piss the dictator off so much that there is this massive army of bugs underground that she feeds corpses to. And when you piss her off enough, she tells her followers, stop feeding the bugs.
It's time for payback. But the thing is that, you know...
And basically, they come out from the underground. They attack all of the mines, which serve as your income, and so you have to like go after these bugs and destroy their nests, or else they'll ruin you before you can ever get to the end of the game.
Yeah, but some people, you see, here's the thing: some people enjoyed having a military sim and didn't want the science fiction in it, and just said, "No, it's just people, just you know, okay, just you know, an elite class of soldier, you know, but still just people."
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some people are you know, put off by having, you know, they're enjoying this military. And by the way, one thing about Jagged Alliance that really people loved was how focused on the details of real mercenary groups it was. It wasn't the sort of mercenary groups you see in a lot of shooters. No, these are actual people, and they had their jobs, and they were tried to be professional. Of course, if you piss off your own people, then, you know, they're just going to stick you a big old finger and just leave. Say like, fuck you, we're out. We don't
They're beholden to no one. They want to get paid. That's it.
And oh, that's the other thing. You had to make sure these guys get paid too. So yeah. So we'll see what Dragon Alliance Rage does. If it's a nice alternative to something like XCOM, you know, XCOM is nice tactical combat. But Rage 2. They have the Rage Act. I'm thinking about Rage. Jagged Alliance is more of a down in the dirt sort of thing, and it does mix real time and turn based too.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. I think, did I mention it earlier in the thing about? Yeah, I did, about the XCOM that's basically set in the Cold War. That I'm also looking forward to, because here, you know. Aliens, fine. Dwarves and elves, fine. But sometimes, you know, I'd like something that's relatable.
Yeah. I think, yeah. And it, like I said, this is one of those quirky things that you don't see too much anymore. Like, the days of Company of Heroes and games like that have kind of come and gone, and you don't see too much in the way.
Duty and...
Yeah. So I guess in a way this is kind of a risk, but I like it. I like that somebody is still doing this kind of thing. It's a unique kind of game, and I like it. I know plenty of other people that like it, and it'll be fun to see if it does well or not.
Yeah. We're going to move on to the next game. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Deep Silver's Outward, coming February 12th. This is from Windows Central. Publisher Deep Silver unveiled its latest game today, an open-world RPG called Outward, coming to Xbox One, PC, and PlayStation 4 on February 12, 2019. Outward promises to subvert the usual trope of making players the chosen one in favor of placing you in the shoes of a simple wanderer, and while details are still light, the publisher offered an early peek at some of the epic combat and creatures you will encounter with the brief trailer. Deep Silver states Outward is an open-world RPG that you play alone or with friends, either online or in split-screen. It's more than just an open-world RPG. You can play co-op, though. You live the life of an adventurer from his or her humble beginnings up until you become a hardened wanderer whilst traversing incredible landscapes rich for diversity and life. Outward isn't up for pre-order just yet, but you can look for the game to hit consoles and PC on February 12th.
Yeah, so this really reminded me of Breath of the Wild, except for the fact that they're right. You're not playing a hero. You're playing a guy who's in the middle of a large wasteland. Not a wasteland, but a large land, you know, and you're just...
Wilderness.
Just walking around and doing stuff, and, you know, you have to make campfires, you have to defend, you learn magic, you know. And this is one of those games in which I can easily see people, two people just playing down... playing while chatting, because it's very slow paced, and it's deliberately slow paced, so it's sort of like a slow burn.
Yeah, and it looks neat. It looks very pretty for, like, I think a lot of the trailer that we saw had sort of a sundown or a sunrise appearance, and some muted colors because the sun wasn't up in the sky yet, and it was just sort of relaxing to watch. I wonder what the... I hope it's not going to be a chore game, I guess. I hope it's going to be something where you just explore, find things, fight things, grow, like get some goods, build some inventory, have some fun.
Yeah, there's a little bit of No Man's Sky in it, in that it's all about the exploration and seeing new stuff. You know, it sounds like the combat is going to be downplayed. I mean, there is combat. They showed some of it, but it's more about learning and exploring. A little bit like Journey 2.
Yeah. I wouldn't even mind if it was something where, like, you are not the chosen one in any way, and, like, any old mob of slimes can just beat the crap out of you if you mess around.
Did you watch the trailer, Scott?
Yes, I did watch the trailer, and TJ's comment did make me think of Dark Souls, how just about anything can whoop your ass if you let it. it looked good. It kind of did. It did remind me of those games like Skyrim and others. But in this case, you're not a chosen one. Again,
it actually reminds me of a game that you reviewed for me, and that was Yonder.
Mm-hmm. I don't. Yeah, but this is not peaceful.
I know, Yonder is more for younger people. You know, it's more my first Zelda sort of thing. This one is a little bit more No Man's Sky than Zelda, but it's, yeah, and it does seem a little meditative.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see more of this game once it gets released and how it functions, and I like the co-op idea. That does look like a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I noticed a lot of people have been stressing the fact that, you know, that they're having same machine co-op, you know, same screen co-op.
Right.
Which a lot of people have been, you know, like, I know that Halo, when they removed the split screen co-op, a lot of people pitched a fit. They were angry. And they said, okay, we're going to bring it back. Yeah. Yes, Halo Infinite is going to have split screen co-op. We promise, we swear, you know, so it seems like a lot of people are getting back to those days in which, you know, you sit in front of a TV with your friend and you play together.
Yeah.
That was a dumb thing to remove in the first place anyways, because that's like the original Halo experience.
with four screen split player co-op. Then you have four Xboxes linked together, so you could have 16 player multiplayer.
LAN party.
Yep. Yeah. Anyways, speaking of Dark Souls, go ahead, TJ.
Dark Souls is coming to Nintendo Switch on October 19th from Polygon. Dark Souls Remastered is finally coming to Nintendo Switch on October 19th, publisher Bandai Namco announced today. The Switch version of the game was previously scheduled for launch alongside other versions of Dark Souls Remastered, but was delayed to a summer release window back in April. Bandai Namco has been relatively quiet about the game's release since then, but the publisher didn't offer more detail about the reasons behind the additional delay. The Solaire of Astora amiibo will be released alongside the Switch version, as previously planned. The figure will unlock the Praise the Sun gesture in the game. Bandai Namco still plans to hold an online network test for the Nintendo Switch version of Dark Souls Remastered, but did not provide more details. Dark Souls Remastered is currently available on PS4, Windows PC, and Xbox One.
Well, probably the delay was because it's so hard to fit everything into the Switch and trying to see how much space you can save because of the tiny little hard drive.
So, I would imagine to a certain degree it's also transferring that network foundation over to the Nintendo Switch's online component.
Yeah.
Because,
online in Dark Souls isn't as important as other games. I mean, basically you're writing clues to other players and occasionally invading their realm. Do they do that in Dark Souls 1? Do they have realm invaders? Oh, okay. So, I mean, those are the two main things with multiplayer. It's not like you're playing co-op with someone else. It's just leaving messages and invading someone's realm.
I would argue that messages are one of the most iconic things of Dark Souls.
Oh, yeah, but that was all the way back from Demon's Souls.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying, that's easy to do. You know, I mean, a lot of Switch games have that, you know, where people leave, you know, messages. Not in the game itself, but they just leave messages about the game in the interstitial screens. Or say, this game is great, you know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice to see, you know, one thing I found that was interesting, which we're going to talk about, is that right now there's a 25% off on everything Nintendo Switch. And I'm wondering if it's because the sales had been down since since last year, and they're trying to stimulate more, you know, people to play it. Because it's nice that you have a game like Dark Souls coming to the Switch, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, they're doing well. Like, as far as of course, they're not doing as well as this time last year, but they had a hit with Project Octopath. Dark Souls is going to be fun. Dragon Ball FighterZ is coming. They have things that people want to play. It's just a matter of convincing people that it's worth picking up again for the Nintendo Switch.
How come I have this impression that next year, next E3, they're going to announce a new iteration of the Switch, which does come with a hard drive?
I don't know. That's probably a good bet, just because right now you have to go through SD cards and whatever. I don't mind that, because I don't have anything that takes up that much space on my Nintendo Switch. But I know that it's an issue for a lot of people that don't have the money to spend on this stuff.
It's an issue for people. It's an issue for developers. How are we going to sell this, you know? But, yeah. It's interesting. Like I said, at least the Switch is here to stay, because when the Wii U was released, you knew it was dead console walking. From the moment it was released, no one cares.
All I know is that when they do another Mario Kart, which they will eventually, Solaire of Astora amiibo better unlock him for the game.
Well, they have friggin' Bayonetta in Smash Brothers.
I want to praise the sun on my Mii when I'm racing down the track and throwing blue shells at whoever's in first place.
I'm pretty sure he's going to have his own version of a blue shell, maybe a bloody shell. A Titanite shell. Anyways, we do have listener feedback this week. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. This listener feedback is from Kito.
Kito.
Congratulations, TJ. I saw an article about
he's saying congratulations because TJ finally got married after, 30 years? 40 years?
10 years.
It was Jesus, John.
Well, 10, 20, 30, they're all the same to me when it comes to an engagement. Jesus.
I mean, technically it took 30 years for me to get married because I'm almost 30.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think you were engaged to anybody from when you were a zygote. Maybe your wife thinks differently. Maybe she, you know, when you were a zygote, you already had me in mind.
We were fate bound.
And you had to tighten.
I saw articles about the C64 Mini a while ago, but hearing you talk about it got me really psyched. I forgot all about all these fun games.
Yeah. You know what was really interesting about the C64 was that all the... it was very rare the game had its own tech font. They always seem to use the default C64 font, which is really strange to me sometimes. It was just odd to see that C64 font. Yep, it's a C64 game, I can tell. Anyways, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, hit us up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. Now, I do have a message for everybody out there. I'm now part of the Gonzo Network, and I'm going to be doing a video show. It's a video podcast, but basically it's a show, a streaming show in which, I'm doing my own show. It's called The Jonah Falcon Show. So just go to gonzonetworks.com, I believe it is. Oh, I better get this right, because I want people to be able to go to the site correctly. So hold on while I find out. Gonzo, I have to edit this crap too. Gonzo Podcast. Yes, so you can you'll find me on the Gonzo Podcast Network, which is gonzopodcasts.com. And I'll also be starting up a Patreon for my show and this podcast. I'll have more news about that when I get around to it.
What's the focus of the Jonah Falcon Show?
It's about me talking about stuff.
Fair enough.
Here's the thing. I'm going to Power Morphicon this weekend. So if I can get the interview I want, I'll have an interview with hopefully – I can't say who it is because they may say no. So – at the very least, it'll be about me talking about Power Morphicon. And here's the thing about me. I despised the Power Rangers when they first came out. I was in my mid-20s, and I could not understand how anybody could ever love such a badly produced, badly acted show. But then, you know, 20 years later, I started watching Atop the Fourth Wall's Power Rangers History. And listening to Lewis Lovaug, a.k.a. Linkara, talk about it, he acknowledges how stupid a lot of it is, but he also takes the show very seriously. And through that history, I began to understand why people liked Power Rangers. And here's the thing. You can think of a show as completely childish and idiotic at times and still completely love it. But he does take, you know, he gets down on it when it gets too childish, you know. It's the sort of show that appeals to people like bright colors, I guess.
I mean, I had the underwear, so I can't say anything.
I never bought the toys. I didn't like...
Bulk and Skull's redemption arc is the best story ever told.
Yeah, that was the thing also. When I first tuned into the show, I saw Bulk and Skull about to do a... what's it called? A skydive. And it gave me a headache after just 15 seconds. Especially their stupid theme. Womp, 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 womp. But I started to appreciate it when Lewis Lovaug took me through the series and how, they did have the biggest character arc, culminating in which they lead the charge against the alien invasion, getting everybody in Angel Falls to fight back, who were the Power Rangers. And, yeah, I can see where longtime viewers would really love that. So yeah, I mean, Lewis says that they were his generation's Three Stooges.
Yeah, I love that show, and I love Bulk and Skull, and I realize just how cheesy it is. But you know what? At the time, yeah, I was into it. So it made me want to do the kung fu and fight aliens.
Yeah, and one thing of course, for those who don't know, it was based on the Sentai shows back in Japan, and they clung on to the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers for 3 or 4 years, Mm-hmm. Even though every year in Japan, the Sentais changed. So then you had Zio, and then you had, and all that stuff, and they would change all the stuff. And one of the things I liked was that one of the late episodes, it was sort of like they thought it was going to be over for good. And as an actor, I could really appreciate one thing that happened was that the actress who played the Americanized version of Rita and the guy who played Lord Zedd were transformed into their real actor selves, and they sort of danced, together, Like, I thought that was really sweet because these actors had been playing these characters for like a decade, and now you get to see them with all the makeup and all the crap that they had to wear off, especially Lord Zedd, because there's nothing... Lord Zedd was just a complete rubber outfit, right? So mm-hmm. It's sort of like nice to see these actors finally, be their actual selves and just dance, smiling in each other's eyes, because they've been doing this dance for like 10 years, and as an actor, I could really appreciate that. And also, the guy who played Lord Zedd was pretty handsome, too. And imagine being a handsome actor being forced to wear the Lord Zedd suit.
Oh, God.
So, yeah. For those who don't know, also, it was shot in Middle Earth. Yes, the entire show was shot in New Zealand because it was cheaper.
Mm-hmm. And there was a lot more just, like, open fields out in New Zealand where you can just have dudes fight each other and have robots explode.
And when you switch to the Japanese footage, all of a sudden they're in a city.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, like, I couldn't watch Power Rangers even now, but watching, I'm going to plug this for Lewis. Just watch the history of the Power Rangers. He goes through all the seasons, up to date, and he talks about, all that stuff. And from what I understand, the low point of the series was when they were fighting a pizza, or they were cooked in a pizza.
I don't remember that one.
And their greatest weapon was a handbag that was enlarged to kaiju size. And it was dangerous because no physical attacks were unaffected, and if you couldn't, it was unaffected by fire. It was completely unharmed. It was like fighting that fat guy from Street Fighter. Mm-hmm. Who was this fat guy from Street Fighter? I know there was a guy who was just one big tub of lard that you couldn't really damage.
There's like four different fat guys in Street Fighter that are famous. There's E Honda, who's the sumo wrestler.
I think that's who I'm thinking of.
There's Birdie, who is like a street, who's basically a street thug with chains and a giant mohawk.
Yeah, I think I'm thinking of E Honda there. Anyways, This podcast is running really long, but, it doesn't feel like it ran long. It feels like it's running about the same rate. Like I said, check out my show. It starts on August 23rd. Just go to gonzopodcasts.com. I'm pretty sure you have to download an app to watch it. And I will announce when I start doing the Patreon. And if I do the Patreon, I'll be able to maybe get everybody better mics. So we'll see. Anyways, you can find me at Jonah Falcon on Twitter.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
And you can find Scott falling asleep on his computer again, and he's at Alpha Shard. Mm-hmm. Sweet dreams, Scott. I hope you get.
All right.
What? He's awake. Yep.
Yeah. Good night.
Wait, we have to say your thing then.
Oh, okay. Happy gaming, everyone.
No. I am at Alpha Shard. I'm on Twitter.
Oh, okay. I'm at Alpha Shard.
We will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun. Play games. Be cool, y'all.